The first Earth Day celebration happened 48 years ago on April 22nd, 1970. You probably know this fun fact that Earth Day was founded by Wisconsin Senator Gaylord Nelson. And here he is talking about the significance of our natural world.
You hear the word ecology. That's a big science, not a narrow one. It's a big concept. And it is concerned with all the ramifications of all the relationships of all living creatures to each other and their environment.
It's estimated that about 20 million people have celebrated Earth Day nationwide since its inception, and it's the focus of this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. How do you celebrate Earth Day? Are you volunteering your time or participating in a service project? Is there a special Earth Day event happening in your community? Share your Earth Day initiative at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's bring in the state archivist to learn about Senator Nelson and Earth Day's origins. Matt Blessing is the administrator of Library, Archives, and Collections at the Wisconsin Historical Society. Matt, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us, go back in time and tell us Wisconsin's unique story as it relates to Earth Day.
Of course, history, you need the context. And by the late 1960s, there had been a lot of public concern about the way the environment was going. Early 1969, there had been a blowout, an oil blowout off the beaches of Santa Barbara. Millions of gallons of oil had spilled, received tremendous media attention. A few months later, that summer, the summer of Woodstock, the Cuyahoga River outside of Cleveland and Lake Erie caught on fire because of an oil spill. Again, more media attention. I can remember as a youngster in Wisconsin driving north on Highway 51 and looking down over the bridge overpasses over the Wisconsin River, and you could see these enormous plumes of phosphorus rising up from the river, almost touching the bridge. And that's so those are just three examples of the water in our environment in the late 1960s. There were concerns about DDT, smog, and air pollution. And we'd had by that time 25 years of suburban sprawl. So lots of news coverage starting in the early 1960s. And it caught the attention of Gaylord Nelson, who was quickly emerging as a Senate leader on all things related to the environment.
So he really picked up the mantle on this initiative.
Well, he did. And like all political leaders, he was acutely aware of the protests that were mounting against the war in Southeast Asia. And he looked at the peaceful teach-ins that had started on college campuses in the mid-1960s against the war in places like Berkeley and Ann Arbor and the University of Wisconsin. And his thought was to create a teach-in related to the environment. And the original idea, he had been deeply influenced by Aldo Leopold, Wisconsin's adopted son, who spent the last 24 years of his life at the UW-Madison. And he was also aware that Leopold had passed away of a heart attack fighting a prairie fire on April 21st, 1948. So tomorrow is the 70th anniversary of Leopold's death. And April 21st also happens to be, and Gaylord Nelson knew this, it was John Muir's birthday. And so he wanted the original Earth Day to be on the 21st, but an aide at the Senate offices learned that that was also Vladimir Lenin's birthday. And we were deep into the Cold War. There was a hot war raging in Southeast Asia. And Senator Nelson was concerned that choosing April 21st in homage to Leopold and John Muir would become controversial because of the linkage to Lenin. So they pushed it back a day thought they could get more students. He definitely wanted college students and secondary level students to participate. And that's why we have Earth Day on the 22nd.
So let's hear a clip of Nelson speaking in 1970 about Earth Day.
Our goal is an environment of decency, quality, and mutual respect for all human beings and all other living creatures. An environment without ugliness, without ghettos, without poverty, without discrimination, without hunger, and without war. Our goal is a decent environment in its broadest and deepest sense.
So, Matt, what do you hear when you listen to this clip?
I hear the profound impact of the greatest environmentalist of the 20th century, and that's Aldo Leopold, who summed it up best when he said, the oldest task in human history is to live on a piece of land without spoiling it. And when Leopold used the word land, he meant soil, water, and air. And you can go through, we have Gaylord Nelson's papers at the Wisconsin Historical Society, more than 500 boxes. And some of the first materials that we digitized during the Internet revolution, we knew immediately that we had to focus on the Earth Day materials in that enormous political collection. But you see Leopold again and again influencing a public policymaker, the greatness of Gaylord Nelson.
How was Earth Day received when the idea was proposed? Was it taken seriously?
I marvel in this day and age of social media how quickly, within about 6 months, they were able to organize an event that, as your lead-in said, had somewhere between 10 and 20 million people participate. More than 2,000 colleges and universities had events. At least 10,000 high schools students participated in. I did a little checking last night. I mean, just going east to west, you had places like in Boston, there were Harvard students who opened up an organic co-op in Cambridge. In New York, there was a parade of tens of thousands of people on Fifth Avenue, and taxi cabs were banned. No buses. In Cleveland, again, where the river had caught fire, the mayor's office organized an entire week of events. In Chicago, there was an enormous rally in downtown, where there, of course, had been the huge protest during the Democratic Convention a year and a half earlier. But the Chicago Tribune reported there was no litter whatsoever to pick up after the Earth Day rally. And places like Madison started off with a sunrise service over Lake Mendota, where the participants read Sanskrit and read from the Book of Genesis. And then there were thousands that marched up and down State Street. And again, there were no cars on State Street at that time, and that was the norm. And Gaylord Nelson was a jet setter that week. He had been on the road giving speeches for almost the entire month of April. On April 21st and 22nd, he spoke to large groups at UW-Madison, UW-Milwaukee. Then he got on a plane, went to Denver, the San Francisco Bay Area, and was in Southern California. So it really caught the nation's attention. And within just a year or two, we had major legislation such as the Environmental Protection Act. Of course, Gaylord Nelson had also worked on the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary of that legislation later this year. He'd worked on the National Trails Act, did major amendments to the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. So he has a tremendous legacy, you know, including Earth Day in environmental circles.
As we wrap up here, what do you think Gaylord Nelson would have thought about where we're at today, nearly a half century later, when it comes to protecting the environment?
Well, you know, after Gaylord Nelson left politics, he was a counselor, the legal aide for the Wilderness Society. I actually had a chance to see him speak a couple times in the 1980s, and he was extremely proud of how Earth Day had grown to become an international.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us, giving this context. So interesting.
All right. Thanks very much. Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day. Matt Blessing is the administrator of Library Archives and Collections at the Wisconsin Historical Society. You can join in with your Earth Day traditions at 800-642-1234. Are you volunteering your time or participating in a service project? Is there a special Earth Day event happening in your community that you wish to share? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Coming up, how do you responsibly dispose of TVs, computers, and your old cell phone in that drawer? We'll get the lowdown on e-cycling. That's coming up right after this news on the Ideas Network. Those old TVs, computers, printers, that really old flip phone stashed in a drawer, these things are not allowed to go in the trash here in Wisconsin. Electronics recycling is referred to as e-cycling, and we're talking about it on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A couple years ago, a DNR survey estimated that Wisconsin households had 4.2 million unused cell phones, 2.1 million unused computers, and 1.7 million unused TVs. Sarah Murray deals with these numbers every day. She's the eCycle Wisconsin coordinator at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, give us the primer here about e-cycling. How does it work?
Sure. Well, the way it most often works is if you have old electronics you need to recycle, you will usually take them to a drop-off site, either a permanent collection site or, especially this time of year, there tend to be a lot of special one-day collection events. And once you take it to the site, they'll sort some of the different types of electronics. They'll get packaged up and sent to a recycling facility where workers will take them apart. They can recycle nearly all the material and electronics, so they'll separate it out into the different plastics and metals and glass, and then those get shipped around the world as commodities.
Well, we know computers, old computers, TVs, printers, cell phones. What are we missing here? What are some other common things that can go to these e-cycling centers?
Sure. There's a whole list. Certainly TVs, monitors, any type of computer accessories, TV accessories are some of the most common, and those are the things that are banned from disposal in Wisconsin. But also cell phones, other small portable electronics can all be recycled. Many types of appliances or other electronics can be as well. We just have people check with the site to, you know, get their specific list of what they accept and don't accept.
Why do electronic devices need a special recycling protocol?
There's a few different reasons. One is there are several materials and components in electronics that we really want to be handled carefully and properly. So in the old tube-style TVs and monitors, there's leaded glass. I've heard estimates of anywhere from 4 to 9 pounds of lead in the glass and the tubes of those TVs. And so we certainly don't want that getting into the environment. Most people are pretty familiar with lead. In the newer flat panel TVs, at least the ones that were made up until a couple years ago, those have very small, fragile fluorescent bulbs. And so those contain mercury like other fluorescent bulbs, and we don't want that getting into the environment. There's also in some of the newer devices a growing hazard from batteries. So our smaller devices, especially if you think of something like a smartphone, the most obvious example, they're powered by really powerful lithium-ion batteries. And those batteries, if they're not handled properly at end of life, have been known to cause fires. For example, if you would throw your phone in the trash, maybe in the garbage truck or at the transfer station, it would get damaged by some heavy equipment. Batteries have caused fires in cases like that. So we want to make sure those are all handled properly. That's one reason the newer batteries and some of these other materials that you can't just put electronics in your curbside cart or curbside bin. Another thing that's special about electronics is data. So more and more electronics store data. Even things like printers may have a little bit of data storage. And so you want to make sure that's handled properly, certainly for yourself, but especially if you're responsible for electronics from a business or a school or a government institution. You'd want to make sure that they're being handled safely and securely so that your data is protected.
So what about batteries? Because those AA batteries that you took out of that toy and now are sitting in a cup above the washing machine, how do you dispose of those types of batteries?
So just regular alkaline batteries, not rechargeable, not lithium, those are not considered hazardous and can be put in the trash safely. Any type of rechargeable battery or some of the batteries that have different chemistries, so lithium, nickel, some of the button batteries are certainly the batteries that you see in more and more electronics. Those you want to handle carefully. So they should be recycled if you can. And when you're storing them, you want to make sure you're taping up the ends of them or putting each battery in a separate bag. The issue is that there's still often a charge left in those batteries, and so if the terminals are touching, rubbing against each other, or if the batteries are in a spot where they might get, you know, damaged somehow, that's when there can be issues. There's a really great organization called Call to Recycle, that's with the number 2 in it, mm-hmm. that does a lot of battery recycling, and they have a lot of great safety information, both for consumers and for folks who want to collect batteries, so I really recommend people check them out if they have questions about batteries.
And typically, how much does it cost to recycle these items?
For electronics, a lot of times there can be things recycled for free. There's usually a charge these days for items like TVs and monitors because of the lead and mercury that I mentioned. There may sometimes be some charges for other items, just depending on how the site is set up. So the eCycle Wisconsin program that I coordinate is based on a state law that requires electronics manufacturers of TVs, monitors, computers, and printers to register with the state and help pay for electronics recycling. So they do help pay for recycling, and some programs you see through a place like Best Buy or through a lot of the Goodwill stores, those are getting some good manufacturer support to help cover the costs. But because of the hazardous materials, because of just the way the recycling markets are, and because of the need for some of the labor and transportation costs, there will sometimes be a charge for items.
So occasionally when you're driving around town, you'll see TV sets placed on the curb or a TV set, sometimes alongside a trash can, the assumption being that trash collectors will take away the TV. Does it work that way?
It's generally not the case unless you know that your community or your trash hauler, if it's a private company, specifically told you to do that. Mm. Because if they're driving around with their usual truck, especially those of us that have kind of the automated cart collection systems, there's no place for them to put the electronics. The other danger with putting TVs out on the curb is in those old TVs and monitors and in other electronics, there are some valuable materials. There's, particularly in old TVs, there's some copper in there. And some folks who go around picking up scrap metal have thought it's a good idea to either just smash the TV right there in the curb and get the metal out, which leaves leaded glass, you know, all over the curb there, or maybe to take it back and not handle it responsibly. There have been several sort of large, expensive cleanup sites where people have just been doing this kind of, you know, scrapping in their backyard and not realizing with electronics there's a lot of hazardous materials. It's not just like collecting cans or scrap metal.
Sarah, when we were introducing you here, we had all of this information from the DNR survey a couple years ago on the millions of household electronics that are out there. Do we have any updated numbers? Have we made a dent?
So those are the most recent numbers, and I would say what we've seen is in the surveys is that people are recycling. Since eCycle Wisconsin started in 2010 through last summer, we've collected 250 million pounds of electronics for recycling. It's just that I think there's more and more electronics. You know, you think about how many electronics your home might have compared to a decade ago, and people tend to hang on to them, either because they think they might use them again, they're worried about data security, they just don't get around to it. So the numbers you read off in the survey, you know, that really is consistent with what we hear when we talk to people. You know, a lot of us have cell phones in the drawers. A lot mm-hmm. of us have that computer that stopped working and we stuck in the basement and we kind of forgot about it. So, you know, especially this time of year when people are doing spring cleaning, there's a lot of special sites. We're just trying to make sure people know where they can take those materials to recycle if they want to, get them out of those closets and drawers.
And how can people get more information about e-cycling in their community?
So we have a lot of information on our website for the DNR. If you just go to dnr.wi.gov and search eCycle or Google eCycle Wisconsin, we have a lot of background information on some of the issues I've been talking about. And then we also have a list of collection sites around the state that are registered with eCycle Wisconsin. So you can look up your county or the county that you maybe both live and work in, find sites there. We'll be adding more sites as people get their events listed with us. And if you don't see something there, you might check with your local government and just see if maybe there's a special event that we don't know about because we don't always hear about them all ahead of time. There's also, just in general, I would say a lot of retailers taking these back. So Best Buy, Office Depot, Staples. I happen to see Staples has like an Earth Day special where they're giving some coupon or gift card in exchange for recycling. So you can also check out some of those retailers too. And they are on our list, but there may be special promotions that aren't there.
Well, Sarah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for the interest in the issue.
Sarah Murray is the eCycle Wisconsin Coordinator at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. She's been telling us about how to properly recycle old electronics. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have a special Earth Day event happening in your community that you wish to talk about? Are you volunteering your time or perhaps participating in a service project? Call in, share at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Sylvia now in Baraboo. Hi, Sylvia.
Oh, good morning.
Go ahead.
We have our 19th Earth Day. Here it's 8 miles west of Baraboo at Rock Springs Community Center. And we have children's activities. It's about the birds and the bees, making bee homes for the native bees. We'll be doing some potted plants with the children. We have a morning hike and several mini lectures. And we also have encore art, which is to artists are reusing, recycling, and repurposing. And it's very interesting. We also have food available, homemade pies, and we will be having a solar display from one of our solar people. I believe their name is Solar Sky here.
Yeah.
Terrible. And we'll be talking about solar, and it's an solar is here.
And Sylvia, this is the 19th annual Earth Day event in Rock Springs, so quite a tradition.
Yes, yes.
And sounds like you'll have good weather for it.
Well, we hope so. We hope it's behind us.
Well, Sylvia, thank you so much for sharing. I hope you have a great turnout and happy Earth Day.
Thank you, and same to you, and we hope everybody comes out.
Sounds good. The heavy snowstorm and cold weather we experienced this week triggered a bird emergency. The annual migration is behind schedule for many birds due to the cold spring. But the birds that had already flown north were hit with unexpected snow and cold. Let's find out how we can lend more support to our feathered friends who are in distress. Bill Miller is director of the Western Great Lakes Bird and Bat Observatory, which is based in Port Washington. Bill, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Well, so is this normally the time of year when migratory birds return to mild temperatures here in Wisconsin? What are we seeing? What are you seeing as the impact with these unusual conditions?
Well, bird migration takes place across a period of months. We start to see some migratory birds, especially the really hardy, larger species like geese, as soon as the last week of February. And then some migratory birds come throughout March, April, into May, and even into the first week of June. And then there's an equally long period of southbound migration in the fall that actually starts place in July for some species and lasts all the way until the end of November. So each species has a different kind of timing during which it arrives or departs, and mid-April is the beginning of the peak time for many species. So some birds that people are familiar with arrive in March, and many of them are already here. That doesn't mean they're all here. So birds like robins, which is one of the things we'll talk about a lot today, they started arriving in March, and there are still more coming into May. And some robins actually stay in Wisconsin throughout the winter.
So the robins you mentioned there, what birds are being impacted the most by what's been happening with the weather?
Well, robins are certainly one, but there are many other species because some small insectivorous birds start to arrive at this time of year. Purple martins are an important one. Purple martin is the largest of our six species of swallow. Really very popular bird. A lot of people put out specialized housing for them. And they only eat insects, and they capture insects in flight. So as you can imagine, when the landscape is still covered with snow, insects are in very short supply. Generally by mid-April, that's not the case. And, you know, just cast your memory back through the years, and you can think of times when we've had an April snowstorm. Most of the time when that occurs, things turn around very quickly. The snow will melt and temperatures will kind of get back to normal. And then the presence of insects is back on the landscape again. Unfortunately, we've gone through this kind of extended period of multiple deep snowfalls, and the temperatures have stayed quite cold. Just yesterday and then through the weekend, things are going to return to, you know, somewhat normal. They'll be in the 50s and even early 60s next week. But there's still a tremendous amount of snow cover, and birds that forage on the ground, such as robins and a number of others, and then these insect-eating birds, they really are heavily impacted by this kind of set of conditions.
Well, Adrian emailed and said over the last couple days, we've observed at our feeders one very dominant and aggressive robin. It was attacking and dive bombing any bird that came near. It went so far as to hold another bird down in the snow, and any bird that came near the feeder became a target of this bird. What do you think was going on there?
Well, that's just one really hungry robin and an unusually aggressive one. We don't see behavior like that very often, but the situation is rather dire. We should expect there's going to be a certain amount of mortality. Imagine, if you will, birds arriving last Friday at the beginning of the heaviest period of snow. For insect-eating birds, a lot of them have an approximate 72-hour window during which they have to find food or they'll perish. So by Monday evening, for example, a bird that had arrived on migration on Friday would probably be in really bad shape unless it was able to find food in some way. Robins are pretty resourceful. They're among our, they're a fairly large songbird. They've got a, pretty good body mass.
Mm.
And they're able to exploit a lot of different food sources. But what's unusual now, and many people are witnessing, they generally don't come to bird feeders. There are certainly some things that people can provide for them, but one of the things that makes it difficult for them is that they often feed on the ground. They find a lot of invertebrates. Earthworms, for example, is a common thing that people see them feeding on.
And we're going to pause right there, Bill Miller. He directs the Western Great Lakes Bird and Bat Observatory. We'll get back to the conversation after a news update here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to an Earth Day edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Chris from Burlington shared that Gateway Technical Colleges will have day-long Earth Day events at their Kenosha and Elkhorn campuses, including electronics recycling. Talking about birds now, this unseasonably cold and snowy weather has been difficult for many different species of wildlife. We're learning how to be helpful to migratory birds now and through the spring. Bill Miller is with us. He directs the Western Great Lakes Bird and Bat Observatory. You can join in with your questions, your observations at 800-642-1234. Have you been helping birds in your own backyard? Have you encountered injured or famished birds? What do you want to do to support birds in your area throughout the year? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Kent now, joining us from Reedstown. Hi, Kent.
Oh, hi. I've noticed with all the snow cover, birds are attracted to that narrow strip of road that's open near the road, and a lot of dead birds, people driving by. And I just think, here these birds fly all these distances, and they get mowed down by cars. That's my comment.
Kent, thanks. Bill, what do you make about driving and the birds?
Well, it's true. During this kind of dramatically unusual situation, birds really are attracted to any patch of open ground. And this is something we've been hearing about a lot, especially this past week when snow cover is so thick. So I just recommend people be wary as they're driving down country roads, because there are a lot of birds near the edge of the road, and they should be cautious. This is another source of mortality caused by these extreme conditions.
Many people want to put food out right now to help birds who might be cut off from their normal food supply. What kinds of things should we be thinking about as we put food out?
Well, as is the case every winter, there's some really kinds of basic information. If you have a bird feeder or bird feeders, you should try to keep them clean, because there are some avian diseases that can be spread from birds dropping. So periodically people should clean their feeders with a mixture of 1 to 4 bleach and water. That's really important to do that periodically, and then completely dry the feeder out again. For the robins and some other birds, right now it's helpful to provide some kinds of fruit. Robins, for example, will take things like raisins or blueberries or other small pieces of fruit. It's good to feed those things near the ground. So a couple of things people can do is just shovel away a patch of their lawn, uncover it, and then you can put those pieces of fruit out there or on your driveway or sidewalk. Or you could take an old window screen and put those items on there. Now, many people are concerned that rodents might be attracted to those things. If that's a concern that you have, then what I would suggest is just take that away as nightfall approaches and put it out again in the morning. Again, raisins, blueberries, other small fruits, or small pieces of apple. One other excellent source for the insect-eating birds right now, you can purchase live mealworms at bird feeding stores. You can also purchase live crickets at pet food stores. Those things are all really valuable for especially the birds that don't eat seeds generally. So if you're feeding birds already and you're familiar with doing that, you know, a couple of items that are really useful for many species are black oil sunflower seeds. There are a lot of different kinds of bird seeds. all one has to do nowadays is to go into a garden store or a hardware store, and you can see a lot of different choices, and they're all good. It's good to keep the area where you feed birds cleaned up, because those items can become wet with snow or rain. So periodically, should clean those things away and start off fresh.
Let's bring in Mary Kay now in Alma. Hi, Mary Kay.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you some stories here. We have every year a eastern phoebe that nests in our courtyard, and it came back before the second of the last snowstorms. And then we had a couple of hermit thrushes also arrive, and it was interesting to see that compared to the juncos and other birds that stay the winter, they were all fluffed up trying to stay warm. I happened to have some suet blocks, so I crushed them up and put them on some lids, plastic lids of containers, put them out. I shoveled off our deck, put them under our picnic table, put some water out for the birds as well, and also I had currants, a box of dried currants as well as raisins. And then I also made peanut butter sandwiches with like the 12-grain bread. And I don't think that the phoebe made it. I haven't seen it for the last few days. Of the hermit thrushes, one looked a little hardier and less puffed up, and that one keeps coming in. As a matter of fact, when I looked out first thing this morning, I saw one huddled underneath our picnic table.
Well,
I do take the food away at night because of the rodents and things like that.
Well, Mary Kay, it sounds like you're making an excellent effort. And Bill Miller, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Bill Miller is director of the Western Great Lakes Bird and Bat Observatory based in Port Washington. Now let's go to Roger in Stoughton with an Earth Day event. Go ahead, Roger.
Hey, hello there. Thank you. Good morning. Yes, we're really excited about our upcoming Earth Day event in Stoughton tomorrow. It's going to be all day long from 10 o'clock until 5 at the Lagerette, which is an historic warehouse located on the east side of Stoughton at 515 East Main Street. We're going to have 45 vendors there starting at 10 o'clock all day long till 5, selling everything from gourd art to yard art to local honey. We're going to have some local farmers there selling the first, believe it or not, green stuff of the season.
And we're going to have I'll see it when I believe it, Roger.
Inside the building, so it's going to be really an exciting time, I think, for folks who want to get out and do something in a community-based environment for Earth Day.
Oh, wonderful. Roger, thank you so much for calling in. And now it is time for Wisconsin Life. According to the Earth Day Network, the 2018 edition of Earth Day is dedicated to providing information and inspiration needed to fundamentally change human attitude about plastics. But some people have been thinking differently about plastics for a long time. Here's Erica Janik.
Elise Moser first heard the name Milly Xantow at a conference and was surprised to learn that the driving force behind plastic recycling was from her new town, Sauk City. Moser thought she didn't know about her because she was new to Wisconsin, but asking around, she learned that lots of people didn't know Millie's story.
Millie read in the paper that the landfill had filled up much faster than anybody had predicted, and Millie being who she was, she figured maybe she could do something about it. And so she actually went out to the landfill. She climbed up to the top of the tallest pile of garbage with a notepad and a pencil. And she sat there all day and she counted the trucks coming in and she watched what they tipped out. And she said it was plastic, 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 plastic. At first, I think she thought, well, it's obvious, we'll just start recycling plastics. And she went to the village board and she said, let's recycle the plastics and we'll solve our landfill problem. And they said, it can't be done. And she thought, well, maybe she could figure out how to do it. Like, Millie had never even gone to college, but she was smart. And so she read this plastics encyclopedia, and she learned that one of the problems is that plastic is not one thing. It's many different kinds of things, and you can't just throw them together and melt them down. And then she went over to Flambeau, and she convinced them to experiment to see what they could potentially make out of recycled plastics, because she understood that it's not enough to just collect them all, that you need to be able to do something useful with them. When she went to Flambeau, they said, we'll take your recycled plastic, but we don't want less than 10,000 pounds at a time, and it all has to be ground up. So Millie figured she needed an industrial plastic grinder, but they cost $5,000. And she and her friend Jenny Ale, who became her partner in the recycling business, cashed in their life insurance policies. And they got the money together and they drove to Chicago to pick up their grinder. And the men at the grinder company, she said, just died laughing, because here were these two white-haired ladies in their pickup truck from Wisconsin. People got to know about her. They worked really hard to grow it. People were calling Millie from all over the United States and from other countries. Millie had set up her recycling operation, but it still depended on somebody figuring out which plastics were which. Millie's son, Todd, told me that when he was a little boy, he remembers them having this conversation over the dinner table. What would be the best way to set up a system? Like, it has to be something that everybody can use. It had to be easy for the manufacturers and also easy for the ordinary consumer. And eventually, they worked out this idea of putting the numbers inside the triangles, which is what made the system of plastics recycling possible. She was not a big self-promoter. She wasn't interested in that. So when you don't get a lot of celebrity, you don't get a lot of money out of something, you don't get a lot of political power, it's hard for the world sometimes to see that what you did has value.
Millie Zantow will be inducted into the Wisconsin Conservation Hall of Fame this year. Elise Moser is the author of What Millie Did, The Remarkable Pioneer of Plastics Recycling. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life on our website, wisconsinlife.org, and on Facebook. I'm Erica Janik.
This edition of Wisconsin Weekend was produced by Chris Molina and Ideas Network Director Cheryl Gasser. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the Green on Our Mind Ideas Network. Stay with us.